There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1044, May 22nd, 2024, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say close, but no cigar for Lando from Havana at Emilia-Romagna. New track record at the Brickyard for a Kiwi. Singapore firecracker coming to Andretti Global. And another first for F1 Weekly as we flush out a new racing contact. We shall explain gladly. Back to you, Chief.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Max beats charging Norris at Imola and also wins at the Nürburgring. Fernando and Aston Martin continue to fall behind. 2023 was so wonderful, wasn't it? Pat Simmons, yes, ex-parolee Pat Simmons, joins Andretti Cadillac. Pretty exciting for them. I think it's a good idea. And a happy Nico Hülkenberg is unbelievably impressive in the Haas. And this week's interview, ladies and gentlemen, is F1 photographer Keith Sutton from Monaco. And yes, I must remind everyone, yes, we do need your contributions. Keep this program up on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. Nasser, welcome back to the United States of America. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing very good, sir. Thank you. I must say this is the first time I'm realizing that both of us should be doing the AARP weekly podcast now. But how are you doing?
I'm hanging in there, sir. Arthritis, but the geritol continues to work.
Great. And, you know, I got home last night, and today I was wide awake at 3 a.m. Cup of coffee is not a bad deal at 4 in the morning. And as you know, here at F1 Weekly, Mr. Rogers, we are still on the Jim McKay program, spanning the globe to bring you constant variety of motorsports, whatever it takes. Now, I'm going to tell you, I went there on the guest pass, did not have the media credentials, but it was very, very good for making contacts, and contacts spanned all the way from Tokyo to San Francisco, which we will explain very gladly. Now, here was my favorite part, because, you know, at F1 Weekly, we are creative. We think outside the box, the cereal box, and outside the porridge box. So, on Saturday afternoon, I was in line at the Imola Loo, also known as toilet, when I spotted a young man behind me. And I had a strong feeling, because racing drivers and fighter pilots, they all have one look. They are ready to go and spring into action at a short notice. And this kid had that, what you call je ne sais quoi, or whatever that means. So I asked him if he was one of the drivers in the junior series, and he said yes. So I asked him, what's your name? And he said, Nikola Zolov. And I'm familiar with this name because he is managed by a company called A14 Management, and the A in A14 is for machismo. So I asked him if I could have a two-minute conversation after he's done with his business, and he said, sure. So after he was done with his business, we had a chat, and very interesting situation developed later on, which I had no idea, nor did he. And actually, he's not even aware of it at this time, but I will inform him via email soon because he gave me his contact info. So I asked him about racing scene. He is from Bulgaria. And he said, you know, they have normally 5 to 6 racers at a go-kart event, and they have a few go-kart tracks there. So at this time, motorsports was not very big in Bulgaria, or in Liberty Media lingo, Sofia is not a destination city yet, but will immediately become one if Paul Getty was alive and was able to dig up some oil wells near Varna. Nikola was trifle polite and cooperative, so I told him that we have been doing one of the longest standing podcasts every week from California, and if he would be willing to do an interview by Skype, and he said, yeah, no problem, and gave me his email address. So I will try to reach out to him in the next week or so, and hopefully we will have a nice collection of interviews which you can post for several weeks moving forward. Then interesting thing happened next day. I was sitting in the F2 hospitality area, which also covers F3, watching some pre-race activities, when a lady looking and sounding very Italian came and sat next to me, and we started chatting, of course, major racing. And man, what a small world we live in, Mr. Rogers. She tells me she is originally from Bulgaria, also and a lawyer by profession, and a huge Formula One fan, and you can tell she was very passionate. She is living and working in San Francisco. Unbelievable. A few years ago, being a big race fan, she launched lipsticks business called Rosso Corsa, meaning racing red. And I asked her who is the driver she is supporting, and she said, I'm supporting the driver I'm sponsoring. And I asked, who's that driver? And it turned out to be Nikola Zolov. She told me that a few years ago she was visiting her place of birth when one of her neighbors told her about this young, very talented kid, Nikola, who needs some funding to keep going. So the lady, her name is Constantina, is now one of his sponsors. She is a serious racing fan, and she started taking notes as I was talking to her about Formula One in the US of A, and she was very surprised to learn that there was a Grand Prix once upon a time in Phoenix, Arizona also. And since the U.S. Southwest, you know, Arizona, California, New Mexico is my favorite part of the world, I did not tell her. Attendance at the F1 race was below number of spectators at the Ostrich Festival around the same time in Phoenix. I'm sure you remember that factoid.
Indeed.
So we exchanged contact information, and she is staying in Monaco for the Monaco Grand Prix, and she said she'll be happy to do a chit-chat on Skype when she comes back. So she should be back after the Monaco Grand Prix. So we'll do a detailed interview with her. And we'll be doing interview with your friend also from IBM before this month out, as I made a commitment to you. So that's coming soon. Now, we move on to another young driver experience. You know, it takes all kinds to make this for. And that was proven to me once again by young French driver of Algerian descent, Isaac Hadjar. We have mentioned his name a few times. He is very quick and won the feature race at Imola, and he also won the feature race at Melbourne. And he is a member of the Red Bull Junior team, and you know they don't hire slow drivers. So about an hour or so after his victory in the feature race, I was in the hospitality area. I saw him just outside, you know, hanging out in good mood. So I approached him and asked him. First thing I said, hey, not today, but down the road, if we can do an interview via Skype or whatever for about 5-10 minutes. And he said, you know what he said to me? He was friendly and in good mood. He says, no, I don't want to talk to the media. So I asked him, man, are you on the Kimi Raikkonen program? He said, all drivers are the same. They don't want to talk to the media. They just don't say it. Which, with all due respect to him, I find it hard to believe. He must be seeing the same shrink as Kimi and Monty, I think. Now, sir, very important question. Before the race, the Ayrton Senna McLaren drive-around by Sebastian Vettel was very moving for a lot of people and emotional for the driver himself and his papito. What was your take on that? Did you enjoy that?
Very moving. Memories flowed. And Vettel is always doing good things. Him and his father are just a great team.
Yes, and he is down-to-earth kind of guy. I don't think I've ever met the guy. I saw him briefly, very up close and personal when he was just before he started in Formula One. He looked like a high school boy, and it was, I remember, at a DTM race, and he was hanging out with the Mercedes people, Norbert Haug and company. Yeah, that was very nice, you know. And, you know, one thing I noticed at Imola, which shouldn't surprise anyone, obviously when the cars are going, they are making the noise they do these days. and so you don't hear much. But was so obvious there on Friday, Saturday, when even on the warm-up lap, when any car was going, apart from the engine noise, there was pin drop silence. But man, any time one of the two red Ferraris came out of the pit lane, and I was, by the way, the F2 hospitality area, and the paddock was right opposite to the Rivazza corner, which is one of the last corners. But man, any time, and they had a couple of big screen TVs there, any time they show a red car leave the pit lane, oh boy, giggling, whistling, and chanting. So the Paisans were very supportive of Scuderia Ferrari, which was very nice to see. So it was good fun. But you know, what was interesting is the whole thing for Senna was very nicely done. And especially, you know, for me, what really got to me was when Seb was displaying the Brazilian and Austrian flags. Because on that weekend, two lives were lost, Senna and Roland Ratzenberger. And I have heard many times over the years, after Senna's car was brought to the pits after the crash, the crew found an Austrian flag in the cockpit, which was brought to my attention when it happened a long time ago. And Senna was planning to wave the Austrian flag had he won the race. So it was quite a chilling moment for people who were watching this live back in 1994. Anything before the pre-race that you liked, sir?
I liked all of it. I loved Imola. It's a great part of Italy. And the weather was stupendous. Just not too happy with Fernando and Aston Martin. But other than that, everything was great.
Yeah, and I was staying in a town called Milano Marittima by the Adriatic. Very, like you said, very beautiful part of Italy. And it's about a 40-minute drive to the track. So every day I left very early, between 6 and 6:30, beat the traffic. I did not have media credentials, so obviously I did not have any media parking. But there is ample parking available outside the track. And the young whippersnappers can get to the track in about 15 to 20 minutes. A little bit longer for people like me. But that's another story. And it was very nice. You know, a lot of people were mingling around. Norbert Vettel, who is Sebastian's dad, he was spending some time there. I also had a brief chat with René Rosen. He is the owner of a very successful junior team in Europe. Prema, both Kimi Antonelli and Ollie Bearman are driving in F2 with his team, and they are now coming to IndyCar racing next season, expanding to IndyCars, I should say, with Chevrolet engines, and he told me that they will enter two cars, and really there was no point in asking for driver's name because the standard answer will be given TBA to be announced, so why waste breath, time, and question. Now on Saturday, this was very interesting. I sat down to watch the Formula 2 sprint train race in the hospitality area, and a gentleman in our age group came and sat next to me. He was wearing some racing t-shirt, so I asked him who was his driver, and he said, "My grandson," and I asked him, "Who is your grandson?" He goes, "Ollie Bearman." That was very, very interesting. We had a nice chat. He said something and requested to keep it off the record, so I will honor his request. But all I can say is that Ollie's services are much in demand, not only by Ferrari, but other teams also. And then on Sunday, I had a brief chat. This was after the Formula 2 race with Ollie Bearman's daddy. And I asked him if Ollie got racing interest from him. And he said to me, "Yeah, I took him to go-kart tracks. But I think his dad did some rallycross and other stuff like Jenson Button's dad." So I was able to make some lemonade from the lemon we got, which said no access to F1 Media Center and the F1 paddock. You know, I can walk up to the F1 paddock and I can go to the F1 Media, but red flags are saying access denied, go back. So I'm talking to Mr. Paul Velasco of Grand Prix 247, and we're trying to put together a strategy if FIA/FOM will give me extra credentials apart from the remaining two U.S. races. So we both agree that, you know, some events will be very difficult. Monaco, forget it. British Grand Prix, forget it. The major market event. So we're thinking of maybe requesting credentials for the Hungarian Grand Prix. So maybe we can get to the paddock and make some Hungarian goulash there. But I'll keep you posted and see how it goes. And sir, this was the most exciting part. You can't miss this. Just like the jet dryer at Daytona, I had my flash of Monty moment. You know, his son is racing in Formula 3, Sebastian Montoya. So my good luck came into play, and I was able to ask Juan Pablo one question, and that was, what was his take on Lewis going to Ferrari and other driver movement? He said to me no and walked away. That left me asking, why am I not surprised? But he seemed to be in a good mood. So him walking away from answering a question is nothing new under the sun. And sir, I would like to take the opportunity in the community to thank my friend, Mr. Olivier Menu. He was kind enough to arrange a team guest pass for me, which briefly allowed me pit access shortly before the start of the Formula 3 race. And I met a nice lady from New Zealand, and she now lives in Australia, Melbourne. And her son is Tommy Smith, who was racing in Formula 3. And I told her I was at Albert Park and how much I enjoyed the smash avocado. And hopefully we will do the same next year. She told me that her son and family know Oscar Piastri and his family fairly well, because both families are from Melbourne and kids race karts at the same track but in different classes. And sir, when I was going to Imola, I tried to stop at the Modena Autodrome, but Ducati was having some function, so I couldn't get in. But I was determined to try again, so on the return journey from Imola to Nice, I made a pit stop at the Modena Autodromo. And this is where Eugenio Castellotti was killed, and this is the accident that is shown in the movie Ferrari. Shall we talk about the drive from Nice to Imola?
Very nice drive.
Have you done that?
I've driven from Nice to Milano, and then I went to Monza.
Yes, and man, as far as driving from Nice to Imola is concerned, it's like a 5-hour drive, and the first few hours are absolutely beautiful, passing through Monaco, and then you go through, I'm sure you know this town called Menton, which is still part of France?
Yes, I have friends that live in San Francisco, and this young lady's parents are from Menton.
That's what they call it, Menton?
Yeah, it's Chin, your Chin, Menton.
Okay, and it is very, very nice. And then you enter Ventimiglia, which is Italian part. And this whole, when you're entering the Italian part, there is like a big rock face. And man, it is very, very nice. And you know, I also hooked up with this young Japanese journalist, Zenta. We met in Miami, spent some time together. He's also doing some races, so he came down to see me in Formula 2 paddock, which was very nice of him. And I told him that members of the F1 Familia are planning a trip to his neck of the woods, Suzuka. So we will see what we can do. And sir, another thing I did is, you know, the thing about England and Italy and France also, no matter what town you are no more than 20 minutes from some motor racing history, serious motor racing history. So I was trying to stay in Piacenza, because if memory serves me right, I think the first race won by Ferrari car was in Piacenza. Or maybe that's where they raced for the first time. So that name has stuck in my memory bank. So as I was looking on GPS where to stay in Piacenza, I noticed it was nearby town Cremona, and it says Cremona Circuit. So I said, okay, let's stay in Cremona and see. I thought Cremona was an old, unused circuit from the 1920s, 30s, because I was not aware of it. It turns out it's a fairly new circuit. So I go there, and what do I see? A lot of motorcycles and all ladies on them. So this turned out to be the female version of F1 Academy. They were testing that. And all the ladies there, and they were talking to mechanics. It was mostly Italian, French, or Portuguese. Then I heard some lady speaking English. So I reached out to her, and she turned out to be from Olympia, Washington, and her name is Mallory Dobbs, and she told me this is the first test session for the ladies racing series, all on Yamaha bikes, and their first race will be at Misano. So I told her we'll keep an eye on her progress, and she's a pretty competitive lady. She told me she was in the top 10. I think she said 7th in the U.S. Championship last year. And that kind of stuff is not very easy unless you're very quick. So I've been posting some pictures on the Facebook page of F1 Weekly, and I'll dig up more and post some more. Okay, sir, as usual, Alonso did win the race, and Max came in second. He is piling on in the time of Michael Schumacher, and it was replicated by Lewis, and now Max is doing the same thing. Every qualifying session, every race, he is setting, matching, or beating a track record. So this is just, we all have to, I think we're all used to it now. Anything you liked in the race or that stood out for you among the 19 drivers, leaving aside the winner, Alonso?
No major crashes from Logan Sargeant. That's always good. Williams, they are struggling so badly. You really have to feel the pain. And me, Nico Hülkenberg. I'm a big Nico Hülkenberg fan. And this guy, now, especially now that he's signed, he even has his own private jet now because of Audi dollars. He's so happy, and it shows on the track. A happy driver is a fast driver. So there you go. Happiness is the key to speed. No, and of course, the progress McLaren has made. I don't know what Zach's been eating lately, but it's working. They're right there on the tail of Red Bull. Now, Red Bull has had some issues with the Pirellis. Well, I think everybody's had issues with the Pirellis, but I think McLaren has less issues than anybody with the Pirellis. They're managing the tires, especially the mediums, very well. Norris and Piastri are doing fantastic. We're going to see more wins. The question is, can Red Bull turn the knob to 11? And we're going to find out in Monaco. Pole position is everything. And of course, the big problem with McLaren, they don't have Max. Max brings that extra 6 tenths that we used to know Fernando used to bring, but now Fernando is languishing. I don't know what Aston Martin has done, but those upgrades made the car so difficult. So I think it's back to the simulator and the drawing board for them.
Yes, and I know what Zach is eating. He's eating porridge from Pacoima. You know, he's from SoCal, and that's very hip, you know. So then, I am surprised that the challenge is coming to Red Bull from McLaren, and what has even surprised me more, I was expecting this halfway through the season, but they have already won a race, and they're knocking on the door again. And like you said, you know, Max brings 6 tenths, then some, and then his aggressive style and a desire to win at all costs. Not saying it's a bad thing, but we've seen that with Senna, we've seen that Schumacher. Sometimes you just need that little push and shove and in-your-face kind of driving to become numero uno. Like I've said many times, all these drivers, especially Lando Norris, Piastri, and other whippersnappers, they really need a car at least 0.3 seconds faster than Max to beat this guy fair and square. Otherwise, you know, if your car is as competitive, maybe they can pull a rabbit out of the pit lane hat and surprise everybody, which they have done quite a few times. So it's interesting. But just like Seb, I am fairly confident 4 in a row is pretty much signed, sealed, and will be delivered at the FIA Gala, wherever it takes place. What say you?
Yeah, I believe you. And as we go to Monaco, don't forget, I believe that it's been 1 year since McLaren got a good photograph, high def, of the Red Bull's floor when they had to lift the Red Bull because Perez blew it, and they got that floor. And ever since then, McLaren has made steady progress. They've emulated it, they've copied it, and now they're nipping on their bum. So it's fascinating, but let's see what happens in Monaco. It's going to be tight. I just think Max is stronger mentally than a lot of people on the grid, and I believe he will get pole. If he doesn't, then Max is not going to win.
Yes, he should have Ajax as a sponsor on his helmet because he is stronger than dirt. Would you agree with me on that?
I do agree.
That's very good. And speaking of laundry, once again, Sergio Perez has gone into a full spin mode. And I just read a few minutes ago a news item that Red Bull offered him a 1-year contract, but he wants a 2-year deal. So if he can win a race or two this year and finish second in the championship, and Red Bull will, of course, win the Constructors' Championship the way things are going, I think they will keep him. But, oh, by the way, I heard from at least 2 different sources that Williams is trying very hard to find a replacement for Logan Sargeant. You know, he's one of five drivers. His teammate is also one of them, Albon, who have not scored any points. But I was told by two very reliable sources that Williams really want to get rid of this guy. And problem is, if they want to get Oli Behrman, he's with Ferrari. If they want to get Liam Lawson, the good drivers are like cute girls. They are already taken. So it's going to take a little show me the money or buy somebody's contract. But he is definitely on slippery slope. And I think, you know, at the end of last season, I figured, you know, it's one season, not much testing. Let's give this guy enough time. But I think by now he has done like, what, 30-plus races? And 30-plus races, testing, qualifying. I mean, if you're still looking for the brake pad in your second year, then, you know, you're even worse than Rubinho.
Mamma mia. Oh, speaking of Rubinho, you know, his birthday is tomorrow.
Is it yours tomorrow also?
It is, Nasser. Thank you so much.
Happy birthday, Mr. President.
Mr. President. Yes,
45 or 35?
35, going on 36. Gracias.
That's very good. That's very good. And sir, your take on Pat Simmons? You know, when I was when I spoke to Mario Andretti recently, and I asked him that, can you give us a scoop on some technical hiring? He says to me with a smile, "Scoop is coming soon." So I thought maybe something is coming, and you know, now the news has come out. Pat Simmons is joining Andretti Global F1 program. I saw a news release. I think it was from Reuters, which has been put on different website, that Crashgate cheater. And facts are fact, but how do you look at this situation?
People need to be more forgiving. He was at the team when it happened. I don't believe he was involved. And not only that, but he has a great mind for motorsports. And I think Andretti getting Pat Simmons is a coup simply because some of the drivers he's worked with. Let's get serious, folks. This is Pat Simmons. And I know Pat knows Adrian Newey, so you never know. I joked about Adrian Newey going to Andretti Cadillac, but you know, Cadillac is a big company. GM is a big company. And it would be fun to see a dream team developing.
Yeah, a couple of things on what you said, you know, an expansion on what you said. Pat Simmons knew what was going on in Singapore because he fessed up very quickly because he did not feel that he should be throwing people under the bus when he was, you know, equally responsible. And as far as people, working with people, man, he worked with three names that before they won any race. Listen to these names: Ayrton Senna da Silva, Fernando Alonso, and Michael Schumacher. So that's a very impressive resume. And I think, you know, he did something wrong. He apologized. I remember him. It kind of hurt me. He says what he did, he will regret eternally. And he was suspended for X number of years. And he has paid his dues or done his time. So I think people need to move on. And as Mr. Bill Clinton once said, America is a very forgiving country, and maybe the world is also a very forgiving place. And Slick Willie should know these things. But I think, you know, it will haunt him. But I don't think, if he has done his time, you do the crime, you do the time. And when you have done that, it's time to move on. This is a very good signing for Andretti because he's up there in age. But, you know, when you have all that experience, you know a lot of people, whippersnappers, young engineers. So I think he's going to bring in quality people too. And Michael Andretti is not doing this. I mean, his approach to his team is very different to his approach as a racing driver in Formula One. It's just the opposite. Would you agree on that, Senor?
Indeed, yes. Thank goodness as well.
Yeah, and you know, Mario Andretti is 84, and I have tremendous respect for his achievements. And I would love to see the Andretti name in Formula One in his lifetime. That would make me very happy. And like he says to me, I am welcome to the Andretti Global area when the team is racing at Parco Monza. And I will do whatever I can to at least go and have a photo with Mario Andretti at Parco Monza. That will be something. Anything, sir? Anything else you want to talk about the race that stood out?
No, very disappointed, of course, with my El Dios, but what can I do? It is Max's year, but I'm happy for Zach Brown and Lando. Piastri is probably a little perturbed because Lando keeps getting the glory, but it's happening, it's coming, and we'll see what happens. But Perez really needs to, you know, if Max is on pole, Perez needs to be P2, P3. He cannot be languishing and saying, what a mess. It's just, he's got to get his act together. And he was doing so well just a few races ago. So I think he's going to come back. He does well, and he's won at Monaco. So Perez and Max will be at the top of their game. So it's going to be exciting. I just want to remind everybody, we have a great interview coming up with Keith Sutton. So why don't we take a quick break? And we'll be back after these brief messages.
Hi, I'm Juan Pablo Montoya, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, with the king, with the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Today we will start with a conversation with Keith Sutton, which took place at the Monaco Historic. He was also at the Miami Grand Prix, but we could not connect, so it happened in Monaco. Keith is one of the most famous Formula One photographers of the last 20, 30 years. I first met him at the Autosport Show in Birmingham, England. I think it was 2006 or 7. And we stayed in touch since then. He has sold his business, but still goes to certain events. He told me that his son has a business, something to do with racing still. So he said, next time you are in jolly old England, let me know and we'll get together. So that should be very good. And you know the thing about Keith is, I will let him tell the story, but he knew Ayrton Senna as a professional photographer long before people knew who Ayrton Senna was in racing. So let's listen to Keith Sutton here. My thanks to him. And we shall return after the conversation with Mr. Sutton.
Okay, folks, I'm in Monte Carlo with one of the great photographers of our time, Mr. Keith Sutton. Keith, good to see you again. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Yeah, it's good to be back in Monaco, 2 weeks before the Grand Prix. Yeah, it's one of the events I really enjoy, the Monaco Historics, because, you know, it's very relaxed and laid back, and you can see some old cars, meet some old faces, all the cars and people I used to photograph back, you know, in the 80s and 90s. So yeah, it's great to be back. I'll be back going to Imola on Wednesday, and then I'll be back in Monaco the following Monday for the Grand Prix.
I will also be at Imola. Now, a week ago we were in Miami and Mr. Norris got his first win. How did that go for the British media?
It was amazing, wasn't it? Yeah, I know, it's something that he's been trying to get for a long time, and it's something that Formula One needed, you know, with Max dominating these past few years. We needed Lando to win, and I think his confidence now will be incredible going into Imola. I just saw Zak Brown myself in the pits there with the Senna demonstration, and the McLarens and the Lotus is going out there, and then, so that was good. Very happy.
Now I have a question for you. Britain has 10 world champions. Countries that are second are Brazil and Finland with 3 each. Why are so many champions from Britain? Is it because most of Formula One business is based in England, or are the Brits just a wee bit better?
I think it has to be a bit of both, really. I mean, if you think about it, you know, most of the teams are based in Britain. A lot of the drivers, obviously, from abroad, from Brazil, they all come to England to start their motorsport careers as well. So we've got a fantastic industry. You know, we've had amazing world champions, British world champions, and British drivers throughout the years.
One of the young Brazilians who came to England to start in Formula Ford, you got to know him fairly well. Tell us a little bit about him, especially from the Formula Ford days and as he moved up.
Yeah, well, in 1981, I was in my second season of motorsport photography, and I'd written that winter to all the magazines around the world. I managed to get the FIA yellow book with all the rules and regulations a copy of it, and in the back was all the list of all the magazines. And I set myself a goal to do a race every single weekend, you know, in England and Europe over that 1981 season, and I sent it to all the magazines. And the response I got back was, we don't need Formula One. We have got our staff photographers, but we would like pictures of our nationality drivers racing in the, you know, in the UK. So I took that upon, you know, myself to go to the Thruxton, actually it was, and look at the programme and look for ARG, which was Argentina. I was looking for an Argentinian magazine, JPN, Brazilian, you know, a Japanese magazine, and then BRA, a Brazilian magazine that I was looking for. And I saw Ayrton Senna da Silva. I never went to find him, but I never introduced myself to him. You know, I was 21 years old at the time. He was 20. I was shy. But I just followed him, you know, the whole of that weekend at Thruxton and took lots of pictures of him. And that was it. I went back home to, you know, my parents' house in Cheadle, in Cheshire, and processed the pictures, did the prints, and sent them off to Brazil. And that was it. And then the following weekend, I noticed he was racing at Brands Hatch. It was the second round of the Townsend Torreson Formula Ford 1600 Championship. And I don't know, for some reason I felt as though I should go. But I didn't have any money. My parents didn't have any money. Couldn't afford the fuel from Manchester to Kent. So, but I had eaten 10 packets of Kellogg's Corn Flakes. And with each packet you got one ticket, one token. And if you collected 10 tokens, you got a free British Rail ticket anywhere in the UK. So there I went from Manchester Piccadilly all the way down to Kent, to Ashford, and then got a lift to the track, walked in, and then just as I walked into the paddock, he came over to me and asked me why I was taking all those pictures of him, you know, in Thruxton. I said, you know, because I'm working for a Brazilian magazine. They want pictures of Brazilian drivers racing in the UK. And then he said, are you a professional photographer? I said, yes, I'm just started. It's in my second year. I said, why? He said, because when I start winning races, I want to get publicity. I want to send pictures back to the newspapers in Brazil and get some publicity and find a sponsor, because this year my father's paying for my racing. I said, oh, okay. And he said, would you be my photographer? I said, yeah, as long as you pay me. So he said, how much do you want? And I said, £50 a race. And he went quiet for a little while and then said, yeah, okay. And that day he won his first ever car race. And he was on the podium with his wife. And I thought, because I'm his photographer, I should go on the podium with him. So instead of taking the picture opposite the podium, like normal photographers do, I was on the podium with him. And I took some amazing pictures. The sun came out. It had been a wet race. The sun came out, shining on him and his wife's face. And I sent him all the pictures. And he loved them, and he signed me up for the season. That was the start. And then over the next 3 years, I worked with him doing all his photography, all his PR, all the press releases, sending them to all the Formula One team owners and all the magazines around the world to try and get him publicity. And I was also, you know, I suppose I was a journalist. I was doing interviews with him and getting him as much publicity and getting his name out there as much as I could. And it was all working because he was winning. I started getting phone calls from Frank Williams, Bernie Eccleston, Peter Waugh from Lotus. And it was a roller coaster of 3 years. And we made it to Formula One together in 1984 in Rio de Janeiro for his first Grand Prix in Tolman.
Senna winning his first car race in the rain. Gee, what a surprise that is. You mentioned Peter Waugh. Did he ever call you to get a sort of a reference check on Nigel Mansell?
No, I didn't. We didn't talk about Nigel Mansell. All he contacted me was for Ayrton's telephone number.
Yeah. Now, how was Ayrton Senna to deal with on a personal basis in those early days? Was he easy to approach, easy to deal with?
Well,
did he pay you £50 per...
Yeah, no, he was good on his payments. He used to send me the checks and everything. And he used to write letters, handwritten letters. You know, you have to remember, when he came to England from Brazil, he could hardly speak English. And but he had this thing of writing letters, handwrite, which is incredible. And I've got a lot of his letters. One's very special to me, thanking me, you know, for helping him in his career with so much effort. So that was pretty good.
No, drivers, when they move up, I think, you know, nothing is forever.
Yeah.
What was the occasion or time that you went separate ways, and how did that work out? And more importantly, did he stay in touch with you after that?
So what happened, like I said, we were the same age, so that made a big difference, you know. Like I said, you know, I was 21 and he was 20 when we met. So we had that sort of things in common, like, you know, movies, music, girls, you know. We could talk about lots of different things, you know, over those 3 years. And when he got, he told me in 1982, when he came, you know, when he did Formula 40,000, he said to me on the plane to Denmark, when I make it to Formula One, I want you to be my photographer. And I went, yeah, that'll be great, thank you, you know. But that was a long way, you know, before he made it. But when he actually was ready to go to Formula One, he'd got a lawyer, and he'd set up a company, and he wanted me to work for the company, like a salary, pay me a salary and pay my expenses. But I was only allowed to take pictures of him, and he would own all the copyright. So I didn't think that was a good idea, so I said no. And at the time I wanted to start, you know, an agency. So I said no to him, and not many people said no. He didn't like that, but 3 months later he called me and he said, look, Keith, I've been thinking about what you said to me, and I realised that, you know, you can't just photograph me and you're telling me you want to set up an agency. He said, I respect that now. To thank you for everything you've done over the past 3 years, I want you to be at my first Grand Prix. I'm going to pay for your flights, your hotel, your expenses. I don't want any photos, but if you want to give me some, that's fine. But I just want you to be there. You've worked hard for me. I appreciate it. And so that was it. We went to Rio. And then as the races went on, I suppose, you know, we grew further apart because, you know, he was concentrating on what he was doing. And I'd started, you know, starting my agency, and I was concentrating on my business. And I think also, you know, when you're earning hundreds of pounds and he's earning thousands, and then all of a sudden I'm earning thousands and he's earning hundreds of thousands, and then suddenly, you know, I'm earning 100,000 and then he's earning millions and then all of a sudden he's living in Monaco tax free private jet, you can't relate to that, you know. We've gone different directions. I've, you know, got my company and my staff to now look after in my agency, and we're covering all kinds of motorsport. You know, I employed my two brothers, and then we employed a secretary and other photographers, and I employed nearly 100 people in my career. And at one point I had 25 staff working for me, and all, you know, all we were doing was taking pictures of racing cars. It was amazing career.
Now, speaking of agencies, you know, I'm a diehard fan like you are, and I browse the web and look at pictures. There are really few pictures that just gave me goosebumps, even now, as you can see. One of them is from your agency. I think you will know which one I'm talking about. It's on. Interestingly, we're sitting in here in Monte Carlo. It is off one of the bridges that the cars go through, and it's an aerial shot. You can see the water flowing below, and it's an Ayrton Senna Tolman Turbo going through that. Do you know which picture I'm talking about?
Well, there's thousands. I took thousands of pictures, but was it in the wet?
Yes.
Yeah.
During the Grand Prix. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
That is one of the most incredible photos.
It was also one of the hardest races to cover, because if you can imagine, I mean, the drivers can't see where they're going, you know, especially if they're following somebody. And then as a photographer, the one thing in the rain was, you know, was all, and the wind, if it's coming towards you and it's on your lens, you can't take pictures.
Yeah.
So you're constantly trying to keep that lens clean and dry. Otherwise, it's just a waste of time. So it really is tough. But, yeah, no, I remember that race very well. And I remember when he thought he'd won the race. I don't think he'd realised that Prost had stopped and they'd red flagged it. So he was very angry after that when he found out what had happened. As much as it was great to finish second, he should have won that race, but they brought the red flag out too early.
Well, the gentleman who brought out the red flag, Mr. Jack Eakes, I met him earlier today, and I just don't have the heart to
ask him.
You know, we're all getting up in age to bring that up, but these things happen.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, had Prost lost that race, he would have won that championship.
Well, yeah, but you mean
lost
point?
It? Yeah, because he lost it by half a point.
That's right.
Yeah, I remember. You're right. Didn't think of it that way, but I was in Estoril when he won the championship. Yeah,
yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
I went to the party afterwards,
yeah,
as well in Cascais. That was and for photographers to get into the parties in those days was tough. But Ron Dennis laid on a really good party, and we all got into it. It was good fun.
Yeah, this is something Alonso would call karma. Now, speaking of Ron Dennis,
yeah,
you know, it's amazing how he got into McLaren with Marlboro money, and they booted out Tyler, I mean, what was this guy's name, the American guy? Teddy Mayer, right? Okay, that was not very nice how it worked out. And it, you know, came around, he got pushed out, which was also not very nice, and McLaren had to mortgage their building and their cars to pay him off. What's your take on what happened and how he was pushed out?
It's something that, you know, I'm not close to, so I can't really comment, really. Obviously, I've read, like everybody else, what happened, with the whole situation. Yeah, it was very sad, I suppose, what happened. It's not something, you know, by that time Formula One, you know, came so big. A lot of money involved. And when there's money involved, there's always problems and issues.
You know, talking of big money, now we have guys, kids in karting coming to the track with lawyers and agents and PR people. Today, when there is so much money available, driver development program, Red Bull program, Mercedes Junior program, for a 14, 15-year-old kid, is it easier to get into Formula One today, or was it in the 60s and 70s?
No, I think, obviously, it's so hard to get in now, you know. They're all fighting for those 20 seats. You've got to have a very wealthy parents, or you've got to have a backer. Jenson Button had a backer, Davy Robinson. You know, that was in 98 for Formula Ford. And, you know, he was willing to take him to Formula One. And I think, if I'm correct, Lando Norris's father was also backing his son. So, you know, it is difficult. But, you know, and then you've got Toto Wolff, he supported George Russell. So you've got to have a backer, or you've got to have very wealthy parents. Yeah.
Okay, now, as a photographer, you're mostly taking pictures, but you develop a relationship with Senna. I'm guessing you have also had opportunity to talk to different people. So I want to ask you a question I once asked Matt Bishop. And all the time you've dealt with racing drivers, who were the good guys and who were the buttheads? We need some dirty laundry, please.
No dirty laundry. All I'm saying is, you know, the British drivers were always great, you know. Damon Hill and, you know, Mark Blundell, Johnny Herbert. I suppose Johnny Herbert was my, you know, he was like all the other drivers. I met them in Formula Ford. But he became, you know, one of my best friends. And, you know, he came to my wedding in 95, his wife and children. And we shared rooms together in Japan. And we, you know, he never changed. Lovely, lovely guy. Very supportive. In fact, he was the one that supported me on that terrible weekend in Imola, on the plane back. We know when we lost Roland and it, and that was a hard, tough one. But Johnny was just brilliant, and he, you know, he never changed. Still the same guy today, and appreciate his friendship over the years. Yeah.
Speaking of Roland, I was watching a YouTube video on him, Roland Ratzenberger. You had some involvement with him also, a little bit?
Yeah, no, Roland was like I say, all these Formula 4 drivers that came over to race in the UK. We got to know him in 1985 when he arrived from Austria. He lived in a place called Blakesley, not far from Toaster, which is where, you know, I lived, and used to come over to my little house. We took pictures, helped him and took pictures of him through the years, and followed his career. And then, you know, and I always tell the story, you know, I was working with Ed, and then it took him 3 years to get to Formula One. With Roland, it took 10. He never gave up. That was his dream, you know, and to see him racing Formula One, you know, for Simtek, and make it was special. It's a good lesson to lots of young people. Never give up on your dream.
And if I may ask, where are you based these days, and how much involved are you in racing or photography, or do you have any direct link with Formula One these days?
Yeah, well, I stopped the photography 7 years ago when I sold my business and archive. But I still, you know, go to 10 Grand Prix a year, but mostly as a fan now. And just to see all friends, see all, you know, keep in touch with everybody. And, you know, enjoy it more than I could do when I was working, because there was a lot of pressure on us when we were working, you know, especially with 25 staff and salaries. And, you know, it was a tough job, but enjoyable. I feel very lucky to have done 40 years and 700 Grand Prix. And now it's time to sort of, you know, enjoy myself.
And how much did you enjoy Miami Grand Prix, apart from the heat?
Yeah, no, I've done all three Miamis, funnily enough. And the first year was a bit chaotic, but the last two have been fantastic. And I enjoy the heat. I enjoy all the, you know, all the celebrities and everything that goes on with it all. They do a great job there.
Yeah. You know, funny thing is, I was at the first Miami Grand Prix, and the race first year got tremendous publicity. Yeah. From the fake marina.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where I was sitting, and as I said many times, the fake marina there is better than some actual marinas. And this year, they are getting so much publicity from those $100 tacos. Did you taste one of those?
No, I didn't. I never got over to the marina, unfortunately. Were they good?
It's outside my, you know, range. $100 tacos, no thanks. But three races in the U.S. Do you think that's enough, or we should have another one there in Chicago or New York?
Well, if you look back at when I was photographing Formula One, you know, we struggled in America, you know, because I went to all those Detroits and the Phoenixes and, you know,
Dallas.
You can, so many of them, wasn't there? It never really worked out, so it's good now, you know. I mean, I've enjoyed Austin. Always enjoyed Austin.
The track is awesome.
From day one. We had the contract to do all the work of the building of the circuit, like we did with Abu Dhabi and various circuits. So we were there when it was just, well, there was nothing there.
Yeah.
So that was interesting to see it being built, you know, and to see it take shape. Yeah, we knew Tarvo Hellman, who was organising the race. It was his idea, and he put the whole thing together. And funnily enough, you know, we were photographing him when he was driving in the British Formula 3 Championship. So that's how we knew him. Yeah. So we had. Yeah, I still go back to Austin. Got a lot of friends there, and we're always taken care of. So it's nice. Very welcoming.
Yeah, I love that try. It's very good. Okay, sorry. Greatly appreciate your time. Love your Senna T-shirt here. Finally, how about a message? Very nice. Roland Ratzenberger and Senna. Very nice. How about a message for our listeners? Scuderia Ferrari. Very nice.
Yeah, well, I'm a Ferrari fan.
Techno Jim, that reminds me of Michael Schumacher.
Yeah. Well, I'd just like to tell all your listeners that in 1996, I bought a converted 3,000 square foot chapel in Toaster near Silverstone,
and that's where I ran certain images from. And when I sold my business and archive, it became an empty building. And as my son was a personal trainer, and he'd done 3 years experience at a gym in Brackley, we've decided to change the Chapel Wellness Studios. Decided to change it into a gym called the Chapel Wellness Studios. So I'm working with my son now, and we're working with Techno Gym from Italy, who used to sponsor, as you said, Michael Schumacher and Benetton. They're still partners with Ferrari and McLaren, and soon to become partners with Aston Martin. So they're the biggest gym equipment company in the world, and we're the smallest gym. But through my connections in Formula One, we have their support, so I really appreciate that.
Yeah, great. Now, speaking of Michael Schumacher, how was he to take photographs? Cooperative or not?
No, not for me, because he knew that I was a Senna man. So some of the drivers, obviously, when they knew you were sort of close to a certain driver, they would... they would hang back, I suppose. So I never really got to know Michael.
Final question is my favorite question, and I'm asking everybody involved in racing this question. Will Lewis Hamilton win championship number 8 in a red car before Fernando Alonso wins championship number 3 in a green car? What say you?
I think if Adrian Newey goes to Ferrari, I think we've got more chance of Lewis Hamilton winning in a Ferrari. So let's see what happens over the next few months. So, yeah.
Do you have any inside scoop for us where Adrian Newey is going?
No, I'm like everybody else at the moment. I suppose he's decided to leave Red Bull, and I'm sure he's contemplating his future, whether it's going to another team or sailing off into the sunset in his new yacht.
What do you think? What's your personal opinion? What do you think he will do? I think he's going to stay in Formula One, not right away, but I don't think this will be his last assignment. I may be wrong. What say you?
Yeah, and I think he's the same age as me, and you've got to have some kind of purpose and some interest, you know. And I'm sure he'd love to sail around the world in his yacht, but then when you've done that, what do you do then when you come back? I think he could do another team, one more challenge with the new regulations coming in 2026. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, time will tell. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah, great chatting with you.
Thank you.
Keith, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Back to you, Nasser.
Okay, sir, let's take a quick look at what's going around in the Motorsports Mondial. Penske front row for the Indy 500. Man on pole position is from New Zealand with a new track record, and I'm sure all racing fans by now know his name, Scott McLaughlin. Very quick driver. He comes from the Australian Touring Car Series where he was racing for Penske. I'm not sure if Penske is still involved with Dick Johnson Racing, but that's where Penske Racing discovered him, and Penske loves a winner. Now we go to the Formula 2 sprint race at Imola. This was a case of don't cry for me, Argentina, as Franco Colapinto took his first win in the series, which was very good for him and his nación. And you know, not to make a political statement, but the president of Argentina is making quite a name for himself on his trip to Spain these days. We won't go too much in that. As mentioned earlier, Isaac Hadjar won the feature race on Sunday, so good for him. The Formula 3 sprint race on Saturday was won by German Oliver Goethe, while Sunday's main event was won by French driver Sammy Megatunif. And now we come to my favorite, tit for tat. A few weeks ago we talked about Gunther Steiner taking legal action against Haas team and Gene Haas. Now Haas Automation, Gene Haas's company, has taken the same deal and launched a lawsuit of its own. Listen to this, alleging trademark infringement in the sale of Steiner's book, Surviving to Drive. And this is because the logo of Haas F1 was used and this and that, without their express written concern. You know, what really bothers me about these things, you sue somebody, they sue you, and then you go through whatever settlement negotiation and resolution is received. Normally, it results in exchange of money. Money talks, as we all know. And all of this, you know, especially when you have people, somebody who has brought you into Formula One, worked for you so many years, I think these things, you know, can be resolved without taking legal. I mean, you can go through some sort of a settlement or arbitration without the legal system. But I guess, you know, boys are boys. They got to have their fun and let everybody know who the big boss is. You have any thoughts on this, sir?
Well, the problem is everybody has a lawyer, and that lawyer loves to stay busy. So some of these lawyers, you know, they whisper in Steiner's ear and Haas's ear about ideas that are bad. No, I what I don't like is this is a waste of time in the United States courts system.
Yeah, and you know, in the U.S. there are more lawyers than 7-Eleven.
I know where to get my hot dog now.
Exactly. Make sure you bring them a strawberry slurpee, or otherwise they'll charge you extra. Okay, sir, now it's time for May Memorial. The death of Senna happened on May 1st. Unfortunately, this month has claimed a lot of lives from the world of motor racing. F1's first double world champion, Alberto Ascari, was killed on May 26 in 1955 while testing Castellotti's car at Monza. Lorenzo Bendini, winner of the first Austrian Grand Prix in 1964, he lost his life after a fiery accident at Monaco in 1967. He passed a few days later from severe burn injuries on May 10, 1967. And you know, many years ago, it was one of our listeners who had pointed this to my attention. There is a video, I think, still available of that race. And what is really, really sad, watching this video, I've seen the video and photographs of the car burning many, many times, but this video really shows at one point a couple of guys, you know, dressed in suit, escorting his wife outside the track, outside the pit lane. And you can clearly see her hands are shaking, and that's very, very sad. And, you know, speaking of Lorenzo Bendini, they give this Bendini Award. This time it was given to George Russell, and he drove to the town of Brisighella, where the widow of Bendini lives. Did you see that video? That was very nice.
Yes, I believe he was driving a 1924 Mercedes.
Yeah, he won't be going there in a Peugeot, that's for sure. Oh, by the way, I don't know why, but Toto was on my mind on this trip to Nice and the Milan, because every second car there was a Renault Clio.
Bravo, bravo, the Clio Cup.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, the Indy 500 takes place on Memorial Day weekend and has seen some dark days, most notably in 1955 on May 30th when the Fresno Flash, Billy Vukovich, crashed on the back straight while leading the race and trying to win three in a row. You know, his son also raced there, and unfortunately his grandson was also killed in, I think, Bakersfield many years ago, and that was very... Can you imagine losing your father and your son to motor racing? Very sad. And then Jerry Unser Jr., the 26-year-old brother of Al and Bobby Unser, was killed on May 17, 1950 at the IMS, Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And I think because of the date, May 17, it was during time trials. Gilles Villeneuve, May 8, 1982 at Zolder, heavy crash. He was thrown from his car while trying to beat the time of his Ferrari teammate. No love lost there. And that teammate, of course, was Didier Pironi. May 15, 1986, Elio De Angelis, he died in a testing accident at Paul Ricca in his low-profile Brabham. And the real sad part was, again, Paul Ricca was meeting standards of the time, which were nowhere near what we have now. And his car crashed, turned over, and the fire started. And he was pretty much okay. Maybe he had a broken collarbone, and he was communicative, but they just couldn't get him out. And the fire marshals there were basically standing in Mediterranean weather uniform, which again, meeting the standards of the day. So I think it was Nigel Mansell and Alan Jones, I believe, who tried to help him out because they were wearing, you know, racing uniform, but it was too late. So that was very, very sad. Okay, sir, anything over the weekend? Looking forward to Indy 500? Any thoughts who will win? We all know who's going to win Monaco, right? In a green car?
Green car. Fernando will be back. He's going to bounce back. And, of course, this is it. Oh, well, this is it. No, what a great weekend. My birthday is tomorrow. I share it with Rubinho. And we have Monaco. We have Indy 500. Let's not forget the big one, Nasser. I mean the big one, and I mean literally, is the Coca-Cola 600, Nass.
And Kyle Larson is going to do both races, I believe.
Exactly. One of the toughest NASCAR races of the year, and now he wants to be a hero. It's been done before. I remember Smoke doing it way, 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 way back in the day.
Yeah, I believe Robbie Gordon pulled the stunt out also one time.
So, yeah, whatever. I mean, if you like fatigue, don't get me wrong. Kyle Larson is a super talent, and I wouldn't be surprised if Zach Brown gives him a test in a Formula One car.
He is, as far as oval racing is concerned, he's like Rick Mears, one of the very best, no question about it. And it'll be interesting to see how it goes. And, of course, the last 10 laps of Indianapolis 500, just incredible intensity. So I'm looking forward to it. Okay, sir, a very important announcement. You know, last three weekends, I've gone from one race to another race. The tradition continues on something very, very important to me. This Friday, I'm flying to North Carolina for an exclusive F1 Weekly only interview opportunity with Jennifer Revson. She is the sister of Peter Revson. And my many thanks to our friend in Maryland, Mr. Bob Steele. I was able to reach out to her through him, and she was kind enough to call me a few weeks ago, and we had a 90-minute conversation about her two brothers. You know, both of them were killed in racing accident. Unfortunately, Peter in South Africa, and Peter won a couple of races, Britain and Canada, so I remember him very well. But his other brother, Douglas, was killed in a Formula 3 race in Denmark. I think it was 1967. Frank Williams was also in this race, and there were some fatalities apart from the driver. Actually, the owner of the track, and this comes from my Danish friend, Mr. Peter Nygaard, he was also killed in the accident. It's in a town called Jursland, which is like 2 hours north of Copenhagen, and it's one of those tracks I would like to go one of these days. And sir, me going to Paul Rica, I did completed another item on the bucket list. Want to go to every Formula One track which was on the schedule in 1973, and I think I am now missing only two. One of them is the street race in Montjuic Park, Spain, which I'm pretty confident I will be able to do it this year, and then the only missing link will be the South African Grand Prix track Kyalami, which I like very much. And I hopefully will be able to do that. If not this year, definitely next year. Other things remaining same. So we will see what we can do. And I hope Dr. Helmut Marko keeps his words to me, and that he will be available to talk to me sometime in July, hopefully between the British Grand Prix and the Hungarian Grand Prix. So if he can give me, man, 15-20 minutes, I'm sure I can extend it to 30 minutes. Then we can have a very nice chat with him. So that's also the agenda from July. And you know, this gentleman from Sweden who introduced me to Ronnie Peterson's brother, he invited me to some historic event in June, which I cannot go. So he said, if you come in July, I'll give you a couple of laps in my McLaren at the Karlskoga track. So a lot of exciting things are planned, and let's see what time and destiny brings. What else, Mr. Rogers? Anything else you want to ask or say? I know you're never afraid to express your opinion, so here's your time slot, sir.
All I have to say is I want to thank you for all the hard work, for the history digging, getting the meat and potatoes of what makes this show so popular, and keeping the listeners on the edge of their seats. So keep up the good work, Nasser. We appreciate the nose to the grindstone attitude. So that's all I've got to say. Let's not forget, we'll see Fernando on the top step of the podium in Monaco. I want to thank all the listeners. Thank you and good night.
And my thanks to all the listeners also, and to the host, because without listeners, there is no podcast. So thank you very much, and we will be in touch soon. Bye-bye.